As we move on now to a live session of technology questions and information, I am joined by Fevzi Turkalp, the editor of GadgetDetective.com. We're going to talk about some of the good gadgets from the last year and maybe some innovations we can expect for the coming year. And most importantly, it's a chance for you to put questions to Fevzi as well, if you want some advice on what to buy, for example. It's always tricky, isn't it? How do you choose? If you're buying, say, a new computer or a television or a phone, how do you pick when they all claim to be the best? So if you've got a question of that nature, then feel free to call, text or tweet. Equally, if you want some advice on how to get something to work, that's fine as well. Same number, 0345 6060973. What we tend to find is a lot of tech questions come in via the technology, don't they, Fevzi?
They do. They do. And they also tend to come in the second half of the hour, and there's often not time to
answer
them.
Yes, and we run out of time. So get them in now. If you've got a half a tech question in mind, do it now. Tweet at LBC or text 84850. And don't worry if you think it's a bit of a silly or an obvious question, because often they're the most interesting as well. So do it now, and we'll try and get you on the air. But we're also going to talk about some of the gadgets of the year, aren't we, Fevzi? And
yep.
Ones that you've picked out. And we're going to start with one which is... There's a bit of a fashion for these, actually, little mini computers.
Yeah. So I picked out a particular brand, but there are many of them. I like this one. It's called Minis Forum. So minis as in plural of mini, and then the word forum, or one word. And they specialise in making these mini desktop PCs. So to give you an idea, they vary a bit, but roughly, say, 6 inches square and a couple of inches tall, something like that. And the reason why I've looked at these today is because... A lot of people are now working increasingly from home. We've seen this trend. It's not going to go away, you know, post-COVID either, that, you know, there's no putting the genie back in the bottle. And many of us would have found that although we've got nice whiz-bang mobile phones and maybe tablets, that our laptop or desktop PC is can be a bit long in the tooth and needs replacing. And one of the things that often happens is that we're short of space because we're having to set up a new work area. So you don't really want a large... computer if you can avoid it. So these ones, not only are they small when you pop them onto the desktop, but they also have this nice feature of being able to, you can bolt them onto the back of almost every monitor. So a monitor has on the back of it what's called a VESA mount. It's primarily designed to allow you to put an arm to hold it instead of a stand, you know, like the arms that might be bolted to the wall or to the desk, and then you can adjust it a bit like an angle poise lamp. But you can also use those mounting holes. They're standard, and you can use them to mount one of these computers. And just a nice range, everything from a very basic computer that will run, you know, your office suite and do your email and a bit of browsing, all the way through to full-blown gaming computers, although I know that's not work, but full-blown gaming computers. And normally computers of this size fall down when it comes to graphics. They can do the basics for office work, but they don't have dedicated graphics processors in them by and large, whereas these ones, these Minis Forums ones, can. So you specify what you need, and unlike some machines, say, you know, it's not dissimilar to an Apple Mac Mini in concept.
I've got one of those.
Yeah. But the modern Mac Minis, and in fact for the last few years, you can't upgrade them in any way. So you have to buy the amount of RAM that you need, which is the working area. You have to buy the amount of storage that you need, is where your programs and data live. You know, you pretty much have to get everything that you think you'll need.
Apple way, really, isn't it?
It is, and there's, you know, there's benefits to that, but the, you know, many of these computers, and not just the Minis Forums ones, but other manufacturers also, don't necessarily go down this sort of system on a chip where everything is, you know, soldered onto the main board, as it were. They allow you to maybe start with 8 gigabytes of RAM, say, and then in a year or two or three, if you feel the need to give the machine a midlife kick, then you can, say, upgrade it to 16 gigabytes, or you can take out the solid state drive and replace it, or in some of these machines, add a second one, which is really nice, so that if you've started with a single solid state drive, which is your main drive, you can just add a second one in without having to transfer data or anything. Mm. So
it's amazing how little they can make a computer now. This, I'm looking at it, and I presume it's about the same size as a Mac Mini, which is sort of 6 inches square, but only about an inch and a half thick.
Yeah, most of them are a little bit smaller in terms of the footprint, the space they take up if you put them horizontally. The other thing is you can, obviously, you know, I think I've included a picture of, you know, how you put it on the back of a monitor, but you can also just mount it, you know, vertically. You can just stand it vertically, and it's... I personally don't bolt them onto the back of a monitor because I like to get at them a little bit more often than that would be easy to do. But it's nice to know that you can do it. And the size, and also some of these machines are very quiet as well. Mm. And that's kind of important for an office machine. But I just like this idea that, you know, some of us are having to just literally share a desk or use a corner, you know, of a dining room or something like that for our work now, and having a device like this I think goes a long way. And people are not buying laptops in the same numbers that they were, for fairly obvious reasons. I mean, that may change in the future, but at the moment people are investing in you know, desktops more than they were, in laptops less than they were.
Interesting. So got some questions in for you already. Everybody's texting in. It's one of those nights tonight, but if you want to call and so Fevzi can ask you a few questions, feel free, 0345 6060973. But here are some of the texts and tweets coming in here. And this is one from Travis, who says, can you tell me what is the best alternative if you can't get good home wired broadband fitted? Is 4G the way to go with a 4G router? What else can I do?
Well, I mean, 5G is ideal, but, you know, a lot of areas in the UK don't get 5G. 4G is adequate for most purposes. So this is where you can't get broadband, you know, to your door. And do check, because although most broadband is carried on BT wires, albeit by, you know, other companies that pee your back on the BT wires, don't forget you have got Virgin and you've got some smaller operators that have set up their own fibre networks. But, you know, I'm guessing you've probably looked into that, but just don't assume that because you can't get it from one of the main providers, it's not available anywhere, because it often is. But yeah, other than that, you can use your mobile phone, and if it's got a, you know, 4G SIM in there, you can do that. But you have to be careful of what your contract is about, because, you know, mobile data, cellular data can work out very expensive. It is getting cheaper and cheaper, and there are some SIM cards that you can get now that aren't designed to go in a mobile phone, but go in a unit sort of generically known as a MiFi. It's like a little device, often about the size of a bar of soap, and it takes a SIM card in it. And then it produces a Wi-Fi hotspot. So the data comes in over the cellular, the mobile phone network, and then it's disseminated as a mobile hotspot, in the same way that you can do with your mobile phone, but it's independent of the phone. So you don't have to have the same SIM card in it. So you can get one that's specific for data. That would be my idea anyway. I mean, you can look at... You know, there are some publicly available Wi-Fi systems that sometimes overlap people's residences, but there are often security issues with those.
Okay, thank you, Travis, for that one. Here's another one from Dean, who says, Clive and Fevzi, what's a good place to go for a good 4K camcorder that's under £250 and not the size of a house?
Okay. It's interesting you say camcorder, because, I mean, even at 4K, people are increasingly using their cell phones.
I was going to say, a lot of top-end cell phones are as good as better than the camcorder.
Well, it's quite interesting, actually, because I've got a £800 Sony mirrorless camera that will do 4K, but 30 frames a second. And I've got an iPhone that will do 4K at 60 frames a second. So, interestingly enough, so the main drawback of the smartphones in terms of photography has been the size of the sensor being small compared to, you know, actual cameras, bespoke cameras. But for video, that's not such a big deal. It's more of a deal for still photography. So for video, you should seriously consider it, because a high-end smartphone like iPhone 13 Pro Max, it's got three camera lens on it, so with different focal lengths. It's really rather good. I've been thinking myself of ditching my existing unit and buying one of those, because it's not much more than the cost of the camera.
Right.
And it does a lot more. Having said that, I mean, there are lots of specialist retailers for this sort of thing, but I would look at the returns policy. I would go somewhere, you know, where you get sort of 30 days or so, no questions asked, money back guarantee. Some of the specialist retailers, although they, you know, have a good range of things, some of them have got relatively unfriendly return policies, and some of them charge restocking fees as well, where, you know, you lose maybe 10% or more of the value when you hand it back if it's not faulty. The other thing is, any purchase over £100, consider buying it, or certainly don't buy it cash, consider buying it on credit card, because then you get protection under Section 75 of the Consumer Credit Act. If it's under £100, then get it on a debit card, because debit cards often now provide similar protection, although not by legislation, by the policy of the banks, but you can often make claims back. So if there's a problem with the item, so one time when I bought a car, I paid most of it, you know, by bank transfer, but I made sure I paid £100 of it on my credit card, because then the credit card company became equally liable for the transaction as the seller. So if something went badly wrong and there was no joy, so a high ticket item like a camcorder, 4K camcorder, you know, you can actually get that additional layer of protection.
Good advice. All right. Lots of questions coming in. 0345 6060 973 and text 84850. And we thought this morning we would also test your tech knowledge to see just how knowledgeable in this area our listeners are. So we've come up with a few questions. We're going to ask one and then get you to text in the answer, and we'll give you the answer as soon as we've got the first answer after the break. So here's the first question, which 50 has put together. It is, I'll read it out here, name the make and model of the world's first mobile flip phone. Wow, that's quite a tricky one. I don't think I would know that one. If you know the answer, no prizes or anything like this. It's just to test your knowledge. 84850. Name the make and model of the world's first mobile flip phone. And we were just asking the question before the break, name the make and model of the world's first mobile flip phone. And wow. Yeah, we do have a lot of people who know their technology. Tell us the answer, first of all, Fevzi.
Okay, so the answer is the Motorola MicroTac. That's Micro TAC, or one word. And it was launched, the first version of it was launched in 1989, when mobile phones were still analog, before we had any sort of digital.
I'll tell you some of the answers that have come in.
Sure.
A lot of people are saying Motorola StarTac.
Yeah, that came some years later.
Oh.
That was. So the
you sure about this?
Yeah.
They're all saying StarTac.
Yeah, I know. That's the popular answer. That's why I chose it.
Oh, it's a trick question.
It's not a trick question. It's just a usually incorrectly answered question.
Okay.
The StarTac is the much smaller device. So the MicroTac, which was in 80, so the StarTac was in the 90s. I think about the mid 90s. The MicroTac was in the late 80s, 89. As I say, the first version was analog, which the StarTac certainly wasn't. And it was mostly a bulky phone, and just the flip was just the bit where the microphone flipped out. You know, it was like a thin little thing. Whereas the StarTac is more like what you describe as a clamshell flip phone, where there's gubbins in both parts. And I'll tell you something interesting. The word StarTac sounds rather like Star Trek.
I was going to say, it's like a communicator on Star Trek, isn't it?
And it's not a coincidence, because, you know, it's funny how it sort of art becomes science, because a lot of the little boys and girls that watch Star Trek grew up to be engineers, or at least some of them did. And, you know, it pays a homage to it. You remember how Kirk would just a flick of the wrist and pop open? Very, very similar device, you know, in terms of design.
Yes.
It was the MicroTac. The StarTac came about 5 years later.
Lots of people say Motorola. Some people saying Razer, which I remember having one of those.
Yeah.
But that was probably a bit later. There was actually only one person out of all of these texts, I'm just whizzing through them now, has said the exact answer you just said.
Was it me?
It, Oh, did you? Hang on, where is it now?
I'm joking.
A Microtech.
Yeah.
Nick was the first person. So don't know who you are, Nick, but well done for getting that right. We'll do another one of those a little bit later. Let's take a call. Here's David in Birmingham. Hello, David.
Hello, Clive.
Hi. What would you like to say?
Hi, Dave.
I was just wondering why the TV manufacturers don't ever put the, like, a built-in Bluetooth on the TV sets like they do on a phone instead of a 3.5mm jack. I always listen to the TV through headphones, and I thought having a Bluetooth built-in would be so handy and cheap to do.
Yeah.
Some no one ever does it.
Some of them do actually have it, but I admit it's not as common as it should be. I think part of the problem is that there's a lot of sort of high frequency electronics inside a modern television set, and Bluetooth is quite weak. It's not like Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is designed to work over, you know, over entire buildings, all over your house, essentially. Bluetooth was originally designed to connect two things together that you would normally have connected with a short wire on your table or desktop. So it doesn't have the same range. And so there is some sense into building it externally. You can get, for example, so the sound on modern television sets is generally awful because the pictures are fantastic, but because they're flat screen, the depth of the speakers built into them are by necessity not much more than an inch deep from front to back, and that means that, you know, the bass response and so forth is not what it could be. And so a lot of people buying sound bars, which are this, like, a bar of speakers, typically at least three speakers, a central one, a left and right one, and it's a device that goes underneath the television set, and a lot of those have got Bluetooth built into it, which do what you need. There are also Bluetooth, you know, bespoke wireless systems, both Bluetooth and non-Bluetooth, that you can buy. And I would say that whilst it would be nice to have it built in, if you want to use the feature seriously, it's actually better to buy an external one. So, like, for example, the Roku Stream Bar is quite an interesting device because it's a sound bar, but it's also got a built-in streamer, so a bit like, you know, Apple TV or Amazon Fire Stick, those sorts of devices. It's got Roku streaming technology built in, so it's two devices in one, and it's got Bluetooth as well.
Yeah, I've got a TV which does have Bluetooth, and I listen on headphones as well because I'm often watching the TV in the middle of the night, and I don't want to disturb other people. So, but it is fiddly. It's a Samsung, and it definitely does connect via Bluetooth. But as you say, it's not that widely available. But a good idea. Slightly fiddly to set up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and there's a confusion about, you have to go right into the settings in order to affect the volume. You can either affect the TV set's volume or your headphone volume, and finding out which one is which is extremely tricky.
Yeah, and at least you've got the option, because on some of them you don't. And what you can't do is, if you've got, say, a member of the family who's a bit hard of hearing, for example, that you would want them maybe to have the earpiece or the headset, but you wouldn't want them
still do the speakers.
Yeah, you wouldn't want the main volume affected.
Well, to be fair, this does do that.
Yeah.
It is out there, but it's a very good point, David. People still arguing about whether the now this. Some people are saying no, the Motorola Microtech wasn't a flip phone, really. And I've just had a look at it, and it's got a flip over the keys, hasn't it?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I'd say the StarTAC looks more like your traditional flip phone.
Yeah,
that's like a communicator.
So yeah, I mean, we're maybe into semantics now. I would say that the StarTAC is more described as a clamshell.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, you know, the flip phone, it does have a flip on it. It flips open. It's a flip phone.
Oh, dear. Wish I'd never started this now.
Do you know what? I was writing
whose
these questions.
Whose idea was this?
Yeah, I know. I was writing these questions and I thought, how can I make them as not that easily Googleable and yet, you know,
well, that's true.
With a clear answer as well. So I've sort of gone a middle path.
Here's a question from Neil in Chessington, who says, Fevzi, I've just bought a Google Nest Mini. How can I best deploy this smart speaker for everyday tasks like web surfing, calendar, phone calls, texting, WhatsApp, etc.?
Right. Well, okay. So you connect it via Wi-Fi, unfortunately, and it will provide you with all sorts of voice-operated functionality. The same in that sense as an Amazon Echo unit. But although the Amazon Echoes have got probably more third-party support from other devices, Google has been catching up in the last year or two. So, for example, if you get yourself a smart doorbell, you can make the doorbell ring, and then you can speak to the person through the Google Nest Mini as well. So, you know, that sort of thing you can do quite well. If I was starting from scratch, I probably would go with the Echoes. And bear in mind also, the Google Nest Mini doesn't have a screen. It is just a smart speaker. Whereas if you go for one of the higher-end Google devices or one of the Echo Show devices from Amazon, that would probably, you know, be more flexible, because then you can watch, you know, video and photos and stuff like that on it as well. But you can use it to access and interact with your doorbell. You can use it to control the lighting. If you've got, in your home, you can control which lights go on and off. You can, if the bulb supports it, you can change the color or the intensity of the light. It's quite a lot you can do. Again, if you've got a thermostat, It will link into that. And Google do have quite a nice ecosystem. They've got the Google Nest cameras, which are not terribly cheap, but, you know, have their place. And then you've got Google smoke alarms and thermostats as well. So all of those things will integrate very nicely, plus all the other third-party things. So you could get some, for example, that stream bar that I mentioned to you, that will interact with the Google system as well as the Amazon Echo system, so you can get voice control. There's quite a lot, you know, to be done with it, but it needs a bit of thinking about, and you need to think before you buy that, what do I already have? What smart devices do I already have, and which ecosystem or systems do they support?
Well, talking of which, a lot of people now listen to the radio on a smart speaker.
Yeah.
And last time you were on, we were talking about one person who'd got one for Christmas, had got a HomePod Mini, which is an Apple smart speaker, and she was saying she couldn't get it. No matter how hard she tried, she couldn't get it to play LBC. And I think we eventually worked out a form of words. I did put that to the test, because I have got one of those Apple HomePods, and I've actually never used the bit where you speak to it. I've just used it as a speaker where you send things to.
Oh, interesting.
I've never used the talky bit.
Yes.
However, I tried it anyway, just out of interest, and I just said, "Hey, da, 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 play LBC radio," and within 5 seconds, up popped, I think it was David Lemmy at the time. So it works.
Yes.
It definitely works. Yeah. It shouldn't need anything else added in at all. So I'm not sure what was going on there with that particular texter, because it definitely works. The reason I haven't particularly, maybe you could advise on this, but the reason I haven't used the speaky bit of the smart speaker before is because I was listening to music on Spotify, and that doesn't link up with the Apple thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, to go for one of the Siri-based devices, you really have to be invested in the ecosystem and have things like Apple Music and rather than Spotify. I would say of the three, the Google, the Amazon, and the Apple, the smart bit of the smart speaker, the Siri bit, is not as smart as the other two. And it's not as smart for an interesting reason. Artificial intelligence programs are trained by consuming lots of data. They get all the recordings of your data and they munch on it, and that's how they can understand every different accent. You know, it wasn't so many years ago, if you had voice recognition on a PC, which is what it would have been in those days, you had to train it by reading a chapter of text to it that was predefined, so it could work out what your accent was. That's a thing of the past now, because these programs have learned about all the different accents that people speak with and have learned how to understand them. So because Google and Amazon's privacy policies are not as consumer friendly, I would suggest, as Apple's, Apple's AI doesn't have as much data to go on, and therefore is not as good. So it's quite interesting that, you know, by being so consumer focused, the Siri has been lagging behind for years and years, and you know, they've brought in all sorts of people from their competitors, and still, I mean, it is improving, but I don't think it's gaining on its competitors. You know, I think if anything, they're pulling away. So you know, but if you are, you know, all in on the Apple ecosystem, it is worth considering. They do some very nice things with sort of psychoacoustics as well, where the device detects where it is in the room and how far away the walls are by bouncing sounds off them, and it adapts the sound so that you've got this great sound, you know, for the environment that it's in. So it's really quite clever. The HomePod Mini makes a much better sound than something, you know, the size of your fist should be able to do.
I'm amazed by the quality of sound.
Yeah.
And the fact they can get bass booming out of this thing that's about the size of an orange is pretty incredible as well.
Yeah. And some of that is just trickery. You know, it's not that the speaker is actually better. It's just that it knows how your brain processes sound.
Wow. Well, it's tricking me very, very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, here's another tech question. Let's see if anyone can answer this one and answer it on text on 84850. The question is, name the operating system used by current models of Apple iPad. The operating system used by current models of the Apple iPad. Now, Fevzi's question was testing your tech knowledge. Nobody's got it right so far, I think. I'm not sure. The question was, name the operating system used by current models of the Apple iPad. And this might be one of Fevzi's trick questions. Let me have a quick look and see whether anyone's got it correct. Yes, okay, yeah. We have got the first person through with the correct answer was Dan in Immingham. And the answer is?
The answer is iPad OS.
iPad OS.
Notably not iOS. iOS is for the smartphone.
Dan in Croydon fell for that one, but went for iOS. But it's iPad OS, which is a tablet version of the phone software iOS, currently on update version 15, says Dan. George got that one right as well, but Dan was the first one through, and quite a few others getting it right now. So well done. We're all learning something this morning. Now, I wanted to ask you, whilst we're talking about phones, you mentioned, obviously, things like flip phones, which are all the rage, and then we got the sort of new version of flip phones, where they fold out, the actual screen folds over as well.
Yes.
Two questions, really. Has that actually taken off, or was that a gimmick? And what's going to be the gimmick this year?
Okay, so flip phones, where, as you say, where the screen actually flips, so it hasn't got, you know, it's not just a hinge and two sections hinged together. You've got a continuity, so you can actually open up the phone and get what's essentially like a small tablet, because it'll have a screen on each surface, effectively. So the problem with them is, like most of these sort of groundbreaking technologies, is they're extremely expensive in the beginning. So you're talking well over £1,000 plus for any of these devices. The first generation was certainly really poor. In fact, a lot of them broke in the hands of the journalists that were sent them to test. You know, they are somewhat better now, but I personally wouldn't advise anybody to, unless you were so flush with cash that, you know, £1,500 doesn't matter to you. I wouldn't recommend spending your money on that technology, because, in my opinion, the likelihood is that they're not going to have the same usable lifespan as more conventional phones yet. It's interesting, for example, I'm sure Apple has been working on this for quite some time as well, but Apple don't bring things to market until they think it's ready, and part of being ready is reliable. So I think, you know, it's a good thing. It's an interesting thing. In the future, I suppose, we will worry less about the screens, because we'll have smart glasses. So the smart glasses initially will link wirelessly to the smartphone. So they're rather like the Apple Watch doesn't really work independently truly independently.
We're not really going to be walking around with funny glasses, though, are we?
Well, they're not looking that funny because
face... They're still wearing glasses. I mean, unless you already wear glasses, surely people are not going to walk around.
Facebook, as they were at that particular moment, did a deal with Ray-Ban, sunset, and they've made a pair of glasses that looks very much like a pair of Ray-Bans because that's what they are. The amount of technology in them is not very, very great. Apple are known to be working on theirs. Google did the Google Glasses, which they sort of made available as a sort of beta product for a while and then quietly withdrew. I think we are going to see them, and it's going to... Well, for one thing, the screens won't be as important on your device because you'll be able to see, you know, some sort of screen projection into the lenses themselves. And then bear in mind that these will be augmented reality more than virtual reality. So you'll be able to see reality through them, i.e. the real world, but you'll have a layer of data or information overlaid on it. So it's a bit like a heads-up display, they would find in fighter jets, where the pilot of a fighter jet at high speed doesn't have time to look down at the dials, so they project it up onto the cockpit. And in the same way, you'll be able to have sat nav projected into your glasses. When you walk past a store, they will recognize you, identify you, maybe offer you a special deal if you step inside. Okay. You know, all sorts of things. You'll be able to message. You'll be able to identify people. So you'll be able to look at a face, and it will ID that person.
Could you sit down instead of having a big screen television? You could just sit down, put your glasses on, and watch a film.
I think eventually, yes. I think the problem is eye fatigue, because the eye is having to... Well, it depends. If you're going to watch a film, you don't want to watch what's beyond the glasses, in a sense, yeah? So, because it's augmented reality, not virtual reality. If you were to have virtual reality, the problem is your eyes are focusing at close distance all the time,
right?
And that's going to make you
not good for them.
It's a problem not solved yet. I mean, you know that this is an interim technology. You know where one is going with this. Is
I hate to think.
Well, it's a neural interface, isn't it?
So, no.
So at the moment, we see through our eyes, and our eyes convert the photons of light into an electrical impulse, which then gets sent by nerves to the brain. Optic nerve goes to the brain. The brain doesn't need to really know anything about the eye and how it works. In fact, the human eye sees upside down and the brain flips it for you, by the way. So it doesn't really need to know, which is why we've been successful in feeding the brain with senses and limbs that it's not used to. So they've successfully added a robotic limb into a brain interface, and the brain could quite happily control the two natural limbs and the third one. And it can do night vision, and it can do all sorts of things. So the brain just thinks about electrical impulses. So if we were able to bypass the human eye and feed the brain directly, then all our senses could be recreated in the brain, which is where they're sensed, you know, in the true sense of the word. And, you know, the ears would be, and the eyes and the sense of touch and everything, and smell would be peripheral if we worked out how to stimulate the brain the right way. And there are lots of people working on that. Elon Musk has got a company working on a neural interface. He's experimenting on pigs. Facebook or Meta, as they are now, have invested lots of money. You have to look at where commercial companies are spending money on research, because they only spend that money if they think that somewhere along the line there's going to be a commercial application. Think of Uber. How much money has Uber invested in self-driving vehicles? Because they will be a real thing, and they will cut their costs by doing away with human drivers.
Yeah.
And in the same way, imagine, I mean, Facebook rather, or Meta, already knows so much about us, right, as does Google. From what web pages we visit, and, you know, how we communicate and who we communicate with. Just imagine, and they own Oculus, right? The Oculus Rift, which are the VR headsets for gaming, and you have to have a Facebook account for that to work, and they link in all the data. Just imagine when they work out literally how to read your mind.
Right. Now, As a measure of how far we've come, here's a text from Chris in Fulham, who says, in 1986, I sold the first ever mobile phones for what was then Rakel Vodafone, as they were our neighbours in Fulham and Hammersmith, where I was working for chain BMW.
Yep.
Not only did we get commission on the telephones sold, we got a dot matrix printout of all the calls each month, and we got a commission from that too. And I was the envy of all my mates, as I had a Motorola mobile that sat on a massive battery, and it was nicknamed the talking handbag.
Yeah.
We've come quite a long way since
then. Yeah, because they had the early ones. Well, they were car phones, and hence the name car phone. I think we discussed this the other day, didn't we?
Car phone warehouse,
exactly. Yeah. And there was a company phone. And, you know, people would say, oh, can I take the company phone? I've got a meeting. And it would be something like a small briefcase with a battery and a coil, and then going into this handset, which was brick-like,
absolutely,
to say the least.
Yes, the brick. Okay, here's one more question, testing your tech knowledge then. Answer the other side of the break. Name the robot which appeared regularly in the original series of Lost in Space. If you know the answer, the robot that appeared regularly in the original series of Lost in Space. LBC, good morning. We're talking technology until 3 o'clock. And we had the question from Fevzi Turkalp, name the robot which appeared regularly in the original series of Lost in Space. And nobody's got it right, as far as I can tell. You tell me the answer. Lots of people are saying Robbie the robot. I think this is another one of your trick questions, isn't it?
It's not a trick. It's just commonly misunderstood. Right, so Robbie the robot was the robot from the 1950s classic film Forbidden Planet, which itself was based on Shakespeare's The Tempest. And that was known as Robbie. And the one in Lost in Space looks a lot like Robbie, but isn't. One of them has legs. The other one, I think the one in Lost in Space, was on wheels. They were different. The robot in Lost in Space was only ever known as Robot. She didn't have a name. It was a model B9, as in letter B hyphen 9, as I suppose, as in harmless, right, benign. But
Jimmy in Lancashire knew that, and Bill knew that one as well.
Yeah. And the other thing, and the reason why I had to amend the wording on this question, because I put in the word regularly appeared, because actually Robbie the robot did make, I think, 3 or 4 cameo appearances in Lost in Space. There was a Battle of the Robots in one episode where Robbie fought Robot. But the one in Lost in Space was only ever, as far as I understand it, referred to as Robot.
Okay, well, that was just a bit of fun, just to test your knowledge. And we're going to take a question now from William in Surbiton. Hello, William.
Good morning.
Morning. What would you like to say?
Yeah, could you tell us when the January sales kick in?
I just think that there's no such thing as the January sales anymore. I think that was when we used to walk down the high street and buy all our stuff that way. There are so many sales that overlap. So in November, we had, Black Friday followed by Cyber Monday, and that was going for several weeks before the day and several weeks afterwards. Then we had Christmas sales, then we had New Year's sales. There is no single date when they kick in. What we need to do, and particularly if we're looking online, is to try and use tools to help us spot when the things that we're interested in go down in price. So the way that I would recommend it is this. Don't just look at what's cheap and think, oh, that's good value, I'll buy that, because it may not be the best one for you. Yeah, think, do some research. If you want a television set, which TV is best for me? What size? What brand? Do I want LED? Do I want OLED? Do I want QLED? You know, all of these sorts of questions about, you know, what you want. Think of like 2 or 3 models that you would be happy to buy, and then check the prices on them. So use tools like pricespy.co.uk, PRICESPY.co.uk. So you can set up a search for that where you type in the name of the product. It tells you all the prices that it can find currently for that product. And then you can set up an alert. So when it drops in price, you get an alert straight away. You can do something similar if you're looking to buy from Amazon. There's a third-party website called camelcamelcamel.com, and all you do is you copy and paste the link, the URL, from the product from Amazon UK, and put it in there, and it not only allows you to set up the price alerts, but it also shows you the history of the price of that item over time, because Amazon and other retailers as well have been known to let the price go massively up and then bring it back down again and claim that that's a meaningful discount. You know, you see similar things on eBay and all the rest of it. So it helps you understand when a deal is really a deal. You know, what's the historic average? What is the historic high and low of that thing? And you can actually see the graph. And that's really useful. And I would use tools like that. And also Google, if you do a search on google.co.uk for the product name and then you hit the shopping tab, because Google is so invasive in the information that it collects, its price comparator tool is really good. Yeah.
So, okay. Good
so
advice
all those
there.
Ways, but I don't think there's any date that anyone would meaningfully say it's now the sales.
No, it's just a case of using the internet to search, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good luck, William. Thank you. Now, we've only got a few minutes left. I want to get at least two more questions answered, if we can.
Sure.
Michelle says, I'm a complete Luddite where technology is concerned, but as you can do less and less without being online, I am forced to have some means of accessing the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want a smartphone. No. All I need, what I want, is a laptop that I could use occasionally. Can I have some kind of pay-as-you-go setup for a laptop? I don't want an expensive contract that I wouldn't use. What do you think is the best option for someone like me?
Right. I think the best option for someone like you is a tablet. If you're not going to be writing copious amounts, if all you're going to be doing is typing in, you know, web addresses and, you know, basic emails, then a tablet is good for that. And the reason I say a tablet is because if you're not very technically savvy, if you get a laptop, even a Mac, but certainly a Windows PC, you know, you're going to have to learn how to look after that. You're going to have to load it with antivirus. You're going to have to learn how to do the Windows updates if it's a Windows PC. And, you know, to keep that machine safe. If you have a tablet, it does have updates, but they're more transparent. They can be done in the background without you realizing that they're being done. There's a lot less required to maintain that tablet in working condition. It is not the same as a laptop in that it doesn't have a built-in keyboard. You'll get a touch keyboard appearing on the screen, or you can connect up a keyboard to it. A little Bluetooth one or a little wired keyboard can be done. In terms of just maintaining it, and also maybe even sometimes in terms of the cost, if you buy a basic Android tablet, that will do the job. If you could run to an iPad, that would be even easier to use, but not cheap. If, on the other hand, you do still want to buy a laptop, you know, something like a Dell Inspiron series, so, you know, that's one of the more affordable ranges from Dell. That, you know, that's not too bad.
How would you connect that to the internet, though? If you haven't got any broadband, and can you get a pay-as-you-go link to an ordinary laptop?
You can. I mean, you can. Well, the caller doesn't have a mobile phone, but if you had a mobile phone, you could certainly pair it to your mobile phone. Eventually, you will need to have some sort of internet connection. It'll either be home internet via Wi-Fi or an Ethernet connection, or it will have to be through the cellular network, in which case you will need a device like that. And again, one of the benefits of a tablet is some tablets have got SIM card slots built into them, which makes it...
Sounds like a tablet would be a good idea.
I think, you know, given the initial comment about not being an expert with technology, the tablet might be easier to get on with. And as I say, you know, I'm not pushing it for any reason other than I believe it to be true. The iPads are easier to use and a bit more...
Absolutely, I'd agree with that.
If you can run to it. But you can get a basic iPad now for about £330.
And very good they are too. Hmm. Arnudge says, hi guys, I'm going to be gutting my house this year to renovate. I have no idea how to go about home automation or if it's worth it. How would I start? What advice would you have?
I would have good, fast Ethernet cables laid all over the house. I know Wi-Fi is very popular. I'm not saying don't use Wi-Fi, but if you're gutting the house, run, you know, fast Ethernet cables, you know, 10 gigabit Ethernet capable cables all over the house, because you're not going to get a chance to do it again. And if you get 10 gigabit speed capability, make sure it is, you know, capable of that and sanctioned for that use, then even if you want Wi-Fi, you can then set up little Wi-Fi hotspots at the end of the Ethernet cable where it comes out, you know, in a socket in the room. So that would be my main thing. A lot of the other things, you know, obviously if you're running cameras in the house, IP cameras, the ones that work over the internet, then if you've got any power cables or data cables to run, that's the time to do it, and you'll be able to, you know, external cameras, you might, if you've got cabling, you'll need to drill the walls and so forth, so that's a good time to do that. Obviously the doorbell camera as well. Thermostats, you can do it any time, they don't really need the house to be gutted, but you know, that sort of thing. And again, the lighting, you can put that lighting into the fabric of the building, but you know, light bulbs, you know, these Hue bulbs and other similar bulbs are quite clever now and can be operated direct from a smartphone or a Hue hub. So I think those are the ways I go. I mean, to get this backbone, this really fast Ethernet cable that carries internet all around the house, that's the key to it, because once you've got that, most other things can be achieved.
Excellent. And I don't know whether you can answer this one in a minute or so, but I can't get all the channels on my Freeview. For example, Forces TV never comes up. I've got a Sharp TV. Can you help, please?
So the channels tend to move around, you know. They're not always in the same place, and sometimes they get forgotten anyway. So the thing is to reset it and retune, to just manually override and make it retune to scan the whole frequency range, make sure you've got a decent aerial and, you know, it's in the right location, retune it in that way, and hopefully anything that's available in your location will then be found. If it isn't found and it's a problem with the internals, you can buy an external Freeview box. Humax do some good ones, Humax, with built-in recorders as well, so they're kind of nice to have.
Okay, and a quick text here with a suggestion for our person who wasn't on broadband. Someone asked about pay-as-you-go devices where a tablet was suggested. If they've got BT Wi-Fi hotspots nearby, they could use that connection without a SIM or smart mobile device.
Yep,
pay-as-you-go style, it works just like a pay-as-you-go service.
Yeah, the only problem with that is you're on a public Wi-Fi, which there are security issues with that.
Okay.
I would recommend, if you're going to do that, use a VPN, a virtual private network, to secure your connection.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Fevzi, as ever. And don't forget, Fevzi's at gadgetdetective.com. You can listen to his podcast there and follow him on Twitter at Gadget Detective. Fevzi, thanks very much indeed.